The unpopular truth of your dog's or puppy's teenage phase is that it's a very natural thing. In fact, some of these situations that we're going to talk about tonight that come up are not only natural, but it's good when you start to see these things happen. The problem is when you discount their behavior and say, I guess it's just a teenage phase, you're doing yourself a great disservice. You're really putting yourself in a position where the outcome is no longer in your control. And we're going to talk a little bit about that when we talk about developmental thresholds. And we're also going to talk about a plan for working through some of these struggles. Now, before we go too much farther, actually, I can probably...
It's is 0041, would that be like our 12:41 a.m.? Or is that 1:41?
Right. No, that's 12:41. Yeah, 24 hours.
That's very early, late.
Yeah.
Laura, we appreciate you staying up for us. Thank
you. Both late and early.
Yeah, hopefully we can entertain you so that you don't fall asleep.
Let's do that. I want you to let me know as a two questions for you. Number one, would you consider your dog a puppy or a dog at this point? Let us know in the chat. And to go along with that, before you answer that first question, I know I've got some super fast typers out there. Let me know, what's one skill that your dog or puppy has gotten worse at? What's one thing specifically that you're like, oh man, things are falling apart. This must be the teenage
phase. This used to
be
so good and now they're terrible.
Yeah, 100%. So let's talk about, let's do it a kind of chronologically. So the first thing we're going to discuss is your puppy's world, what a puppy's world is like for those first few weeks when they just can't do anything wrong and you think, oh, this puppy's great. This is going to be no problem through this training this little guy. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I think sometimes really young puppies, when we first bring them home, can give us a bit of a false sense of what reality is actually going to be like. Because when we first bring a puppy home, and even if it's not a puppy, sometimes even older dogs, if you're bringing them home, they go through a bit of a honeymoon period where they get to a new location and they're just kind of laying out the land a little bit first, especially young puppies who don't have much life experience yet. They're used to following their brothers and sisters around. They're used to following their mom around. And then when they get to a new house, they sort of tend to... You know, they're always underfoot. They're always kind of following us around. And then we sort of think, oh, gosh, I don't even need a leash with this puppy. They don't really go anywhere. But we know that as the weeks start to go on and the puppy starts to get more comfortable, this puppy starts to age, curiosity sets in. Then you have puppies that are sometimes trying to do their own thing. And that is pretty common for all puppies and for all breeds. It happens at different ages, depending on the dog, but it's usually around the first few weeks of having the puppy home that they shift from, being a little shadow to being a little bit more investigative. They're trying to get into things and smell things and maybe start to chew things or, you know, take off from you, and then you end up having to chase them, all that kind of stuff. So that's really when the training is so important, that the training is beginning, because if we don't get a handle on some of that independent stuff, or the dog's sort of learning to be a bit mischievous, then we end up having some problems on our hands, and then we end up having to fix them rather than being able to navigate them as they happen, and we can kind of get through it a little bit more easily. But it is not uncommon for puppies to start off really easygoing and then shift. And it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with your puppy. It's just very, very normal for their interest and their attention to change.
Well, think about the amount of time your puppy is right with you in the places that they can go. Your puppy's world is so small. At the beginning, you know, they really don't get to go out and see many things, not many distractions. Not only are they too small, maybe they aren't vaccinated yet. They are, because it's new to you, your puppy's new to you as well, you're really attentive to all of the things that are going on. Or at least I'd hope you are. So this world for your puppy is not the world that they'll see in 3.5 months. You know, it's going to be a totally different situation. So you need to just understand it and know that it's okay that when your puppy gets to about that 4 month mark and they have more opportunities, they get to see more distractions, that they're going to be challenged. And it's really why you want to work your butt off for those first couple months home to really get down those foundations. Like really teach, you're honestly, a big part of it is teaching your puppy how to learn. You know, we use a lot of food and training, especially at the beginning, and with the goal, the McCann method goal being the dog's going to listen off leash without treats eventually, but at the beginning you need to find a resource that your dog loves. So as you're starting these training processes, you're going to be using lots of foods just to get the foundations down, so that when you get to this first developmental threshold around the 4 month mark, around 16 weeks, and your puppy's world gets bigger and they start to get a little bit more confident, mm-hmm. you know, they start to discover that, you know, I'm not that really worried about being more than 10 feet away from my human. Mm-hmm. And you're going more places with them, and you're making their world difficult on at a super steep rate, very quickly. And it can present some real challenges. So know that things are going to change around that time, and that you're going to have to change right along with them.
Yeah. And remember, too, at that age, you know, our puppies often are making errors because they really don't know any better. And when our puppies get into that age, I know for us in our training, we really start to ramp up the training. And so, you know, from 4 to 7, 8 months or so, sometimes the dog's behavior really gets good because we're spending so much time with them. We're doing so much training. Things are going really well. We're practicing on a regular basis. We have a lot of work to do in that period of time in order to develop the dog's skills. But then they end up hitting another threshold. And this one's a little more rough. And it can happen anywhere from 7 months to just a little bit over 12 months, depending. And that's where they hit more of an adolescent phase. And this one's a little bit more challenging because in some cases, the puppies or the dogs at that point kind of have an understanding of what their expectation is that you have of them, mm-hmm. and what their skills are. But they now are old enough, they're in that teenage phase where they're going to test the waters. You know, are you still sure that I need to come with them when I'm called? Are you still sure that I'm not allowed to pull over to any person or dog or distraction that I see? You know, is the couch still off bounds, or am I allowed to chew that? Or am I allowed to go to the bathroom in the house again? It's not uncommon for some of those really irritating behaviors that we thought we had got on top of when they were puppies to rear their ugly head again. And that's sort of because the puppies go through, or the dogs go through, a bit more of a teenage phase where they're testing the waters to see if the rules are actually still valid. And what's really challenging about this phase, and we're going to dive much deeper into this, is that people get blindsided a little bit because they think their dog should know better. And instead of working through it, and instead of like putting the, you know, training cap on and going back and problem solving some things, they end up getting more frustrated or more angry because it's like, well, you could do this, and why all of a sudden has this changed? And sometimes our attitude or our response to the dog isn't as effective as it could be. But the adolescent phase is a real thing. All dogs go through it, even professional dog trainer dogs. Our dogs do the same thing to us, but the difference with us is we know it's coming, and we're ready for it.
Absolutely. Huge welcome to Jeff D, a new Heart Dog supporter. Welcome to the Heart Dog team. So I think the big question is, what do you do? You know, what do you do when you encounter some of this teenage phase? And the number one thing, if you're here watching the live stream, it's likely that you have a dog who you're trying to solve a problem, or if you're one of our viewers who is like, I want to get ahead of this, and I'm going to watch this before my puppy even reaches this phase, I love you. We'd love to see you in our training programs because you're exactly the kind of student that we'd love to have. It's really important for all of you, if you have a dog in training or you're trying to solve a problem with your dog, you need good management. You need to be sure that you can give your dog good information with good timing. If you're working on any problem, doesn't matter what it is. We're going to talk about some of these specifics, but I've seen some really common complaints in the chat. Things like the recall, things mm-hmm. like pulling on leash, being distracted by...
being crazy with visitors.
Right, absolutely. Like, these are really common things, guys. So
reactive to animals.
Yeah, and if you have a dog that you're struggling with something, you need to manage them well. This comes down to a few different things, but the things that I want to talk about right away is in the house, your dog needs to be on a house line. And we talk a lot about how we'd use, you know, house line training. When we've brought in some adult dogs into our lives a couple of times, and if we have any question about what their behavior is going to be like, we'll put a house line on them so that we can manage them appropriately, so that we don't have to chase them around if they get something. I mean, it's not just a puppy line. It's not just for puppies. It's for any dog in training.
And if you guys have never heard us use the term houseline before, we reference them a lot in our training videos. But if you're not really sure what that is, essentially it's a leash that we put on the dog in the house. It's about 4 to 6 feet long. We cut the handle off, or we use a leash that doesn't have a handle on it so that it's less likely to get caught on the furniture and the things in our house. And our dogs wear that inside the house when they're out of their crate every single moment of the day while they're in a training phase. And what that allows us to do is get control of our dogs quickly and effectively without having to chase them around, without having to grab at them, without having to scare them and grab onto them with our hands.
Yeah, yep.
And also the other thing is, you know, if you're not doing that, what a lot of people will do is they end up just using their voice and they end up shouting at the dog, or they end up telling the dog the same thing 5 or 6 or 7 or 10 times as they get more angry with their voice, hoping that will affect change in the dog. And your dog just doesn't care about that. So having the line on allows me to use my voice once in a calm, you know, cool manner, and then I can use the line to follow through with whatever I've asked my dog to do. And what that does is helps my dog view me more as a leader. It teaches them that I'm not going to ask a million times. I'm also not going to get mad. I'm just going to say the thing, and when the thing doesn't happen, I'm going to follow through. And it's not uncommon for puppies wearing house lines. We always have puppies wear a house line. Then they sort of get a few months into their training. We think, wow, like things are going really good. And we end up taking the house line off, and things probably will ride out great for a few weeks. And then you might start to notice the dog, you know, being a little slower to response, or, you know, testing things out that they maybe did before. And putting the house line back on in those moments is one of the best ways to work through that, so that you don't let a small problem that is just starting to not be so good turn into a huge thing that you now really have to work hard to fix. So we really recommend using a house line, and it can be used for any age of dog at any time if you think that they need it.
Britt R, welcome to the Heart Dog team. We're excited to have you. She said just to
there was another one before that too.
I saw Jeff D. Welcome yes. to the Heart Talk team. I think did I not mention Jeff?
Oh, I'm not sure.
I might have missed it. I apologize.
If not,
Jeff,
you get two.
Welcome.
You get two, Jeff.
Yeah. Two for Jeff. Britt R., one of our Heart Dog members, just took in roughly 1-year-old that has zero training. Do all the... I love this question.
Nice.
I love this question. Yes, Britt. Okay, let's
you
talk a little bit
about
that.
You should finish
the
question so everybody
sorry,
knows.
Sorry, yeah, in case you didn't see it.
He got too excited.
1-year-old, I'm excited because this is the thing I've been trying to communicate for 10 years on this channel. Britt just nailed it. I took in a roughly 1-year-old that has zero training. Do all of the puppy videos apply even though he's much older? I love this.
Yeah.
And this is a great lesson for everybody here in the chat and everybody who's watching the show and maybe on the replay. It's about their level of understanding. It's not about their age. Let's talk about some of the exercises that like you might want to start off with a brand new dog that's new to you.
Yeah, we don't really worry too much about age when it comes to training, because it really has to do with whatever foundation they have. And when you're bringing a new dog into the house, regardless of their age, sometimes you do have to start at the beginning. Sometimes that means that you'll go through things a little faster, especially if the dog has any previous experience that during well, sometimes you'll go slower because they have bad, they come to you with bad habits that you now have to change. So it really is dog dependent. But, you know, when you have an older dog and they first come into the house, some of the things that I would start off with in the early stages is working on just basic listening skills. Things like teaching them to reliably respond to their name when you call it. I would also work on some boundary training. So crate training, teaching the dog to go and lie down on a bed and stay on a bed or a place or a mat or a cot. Doesn't matter what it is, because that's such a great management tool to use when there's distractions nearby. And I would also learn through training my dog a little bit about my dog's personality. And, you know, are they a soft-minded dog or are they a little bit pushy? You know, I try to learn through training what kind of personality I'm working with, because that then can mold and shape the next direction that I want to take with my training, because every dog's a little bit different. And sometimes you need to kind of think about what you're doing to get the most out of whatever dog you're working with.
If your patience is straining, go back to the training. It's so valuable to know that. I want to mention this really quickly. Husky stories, totally off topic. Are there any videos of bike drawing and kick sledding? We actually started working on a video that was something very similar to this for some dry land stuff. We're not going to put it on this channel. We do have more McCann dogs as a channel, or McCann dogs clips that you can check out. We're probably going to have a video there for you. You can always check out Gone to the Snow Dogs, our friend Jess, for something like that. The really important thing that I want to see, what caught my attention here, I love this. Nancy says, Rhodey was doing so well that I took off the house line, just reattached it.
Yeah.
This is a crucial.
It's normal.
This is a crucial thing to remember, especially for those of you who feel like you're going through the teenage phase. Now, part of training is recognizing that, like, ooh, there's a bit of regression here. You know, this isn't going very well. Maybe all of your skills, maybe your walking's great and you're jumping up, no problem anymore. But when it comes to the recall, things are sort of going downhill. Understanding that you taking a step back isn't regression. It's like part of training. You know, it's part of the plan. When you identify that there's a problem, part of the training is to go back and work on some of these exercises. Now, you're going to make things easier, and you're going to work on some of the steps you'd worked on previously to get your dog to that training point. But so people get so disappointed, frustrated, I guess, mm-hmm. when they get to a level of understanding or training, and then the dog starts to make mistakes.
Yeah, it's just so normal.
Know that you can always put the house line on. We will put a long line back on a dog to work on their recalls, you know, if things start to get, you know, a little bit aren't as fast as we want.
Yeah, or even like behavioral things. I've told this story before, but we had a dog in training. Her name was Euchre. You may recognize her from some of the videos. We did a whole puppy series with her. And she did really, really well when she was young in the house listening. And it got to the point where I started not using the house line in the house with her. And because she was starting to have more manners and more skills in the house, we stopped using the crate as much. And then it got to the point where she was getting used to having a bit more freedom. When I would want her to go in the crate, she would go and stand on the other side of the kitchen and she would ignore me. So I would say, in your crate, and she would basically say, I don't want to go in there. I like this freedom that I'm getting. And sure. So what a lot of people would do is just be like, oh, okay, you don't really want to go in your crate, and they would just let that go. But to me, that's a leadership thing. I want to be able to put her in the crate and not put her in the crate on my terms. And it got to the point where I needed to put the house line back on her, so that when the house line was on and I said, in your crate, and she went to the other side of the kitchen to say, nope, I can't do that, I could just walk over, pick up the line, and then just calmly take her to the crate. So she didn't have the option to play keep away or anything. And then, of course, to build up the value in a more positive way, I went back and revisited some of our crate games where I would have her run in for some treats, and I would practice sending her from different parts of the kitchen and really making it really fun to go back in the crate. And it took about 2 or 3 days before she was blasting back into the crate in no time. So it's important that you recognize things early, and then you address it. I just want to say, Sid had asked a question. Sid Branham, I can't really see from that far, so I think that's maybe what it says.
I said, want to get caught on stuff.
Want to get caught on stuff. Referring to the house line, I'm sure. It might get caught on stuff, but the idea of the house line is not that we put the house line on and then go and do our own thing and then the house line trains the dog. The idea is that the house line is on while we're supervising the dog. So if the dogs are not listening well enough that they need a house line on because they're either early in their training or maybe they're being a bit of a stinker and we need to go back in some of our training, that dog also needs supervision. So that if my dog starts to get, you know, in a place where the line might be tangled, I'm going to be right there to address it if I need to. Also, when the house line's on, I'm not allowing my dog to run all over the house and scoot underneath things. You know, I'm teaching my dog to be calm and have manners in the house. So typically speaking, personally, in our experience, it doesn't get caught on that many things because we're kind of right there managing or giving our dogs a bone to chew, or they're doing something. Where you run into more trouble is if the dog's running around and acting like a hooligan. So it's possible, but the goal is that you have good supervision and you're controlling the situation. So it's not really that big of a problem.
I just got an message from our online team that said they're watching.
You know what that's just
here.
Reminding me of?
What?
Of what's that show where like the person calls and then they go up in price, or they hold a bunch of cases?
Oh, I don't know.
No deal? Deal or no deal?
Yeah.
You know?
For sure.
He doesn't have time for me right now.
I don't, because I want to let you guys know our online team is super pumped with like the tone of the chat. I think we have a bunch of like super motivated dog owners who want to fix their problems, to train their dogs. So we actually have a coupon code for $30 off of our Puppy Essentials or our Life Skills programs. I'm super pumped about this. I'll drop the thing in the chat. But if you go to mckendogs.com and head over to our online training page, and you type in the code TRAINSTATION0713. You get $30 off Puppy Essentials or Life Skills. Very briefly, what's the difference between our actual online training versus like YouTube or another even online training dog service?
Yeah. A lot of differences. So if you've watched our YouTube video, you know that there's some really, really good content in there. But because we're trying to do a YouTube video and we have a very short period of time, we often aren't doing, not teaching the whole thing, or we're not really showing all the progression. So in our actual online schools, we go through the entire program where, you know, all of the exercises are like different puzzle pieces that fit together. So this exercise helps that exercise, and it's a much, much more comprehensive. So you are following videos, but there's also real people behind those videos. And it was really important to us to create an online course that was equal to the support and the engagement that people get when they actually come and see us in person. We love working right with you. We love getting to know you and your dog. So, you're going to have great program to follow. Puppy Essentials is for puppies under four months, where we're working on more puppy stuff. And then over 4 months is our life skills program, where we have a different set of skills. They bleed from one into the other so wonderfully. So you could do Puppy Essentials followed by life skills, but if your dog's too old, that's okay. But we have weekly coaching calls, live Q&As, where it's kind of like this in a way, but much more intimate, where we sort of get to see your faces on the call.
But like the real people that you're talking with tonight, you actually get to interact with them. Instructor Robbie, Instructor Shannon, Kale, there's actual dog trainers supporting you through the process. I could buy a book on how to fix build a car, or I could watch a video on how to fix a car, but I would really want a mechanic to guide me through the process. Say like, ooh, don't do that, do this. That's what we offer in our online training. So tonight's show, I'm pretty pumped. This is might be the biggest coupon I've ever seen for online training programs. $30 off for Puppy Essentials or Life Skills. The link is in the chat.
We have a lot of online students in the chat tonight, which are saying really nice things. Thanks, guys. We love you.
Before we get to the second developmental threshold, I was just looking at our teaching plan, and I think I'd like to talk a little bit about I think I've got a teenage phase style kind of issue. I think it's a developmental problem, a developmental threshold, and I've hit this point where my dog is like, learn that they don't have to pay attention to me. The very first thing that you need to do is identify that you have a problem and not just fluff it off like, he didn't really listen this time when I called him to come. Or when you call your dog to come in there, like, kind of just moseying back, it's just sort of sauntering toward you. Our expectation of the recall is you see your dog's name once, they turn around and they zip back to you immediately because it's the kind of skill that can save your dog's life. When you identify that you have a leash pulling, a jumping up, a recall problem, as silly as this sounds, our online team talks about, making a note, like have a journal, identify the problem. Like, listen, recall's not going well. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
The next thing that you do is to not allow your dog to make that mistake again until you've trained it a little bit. Specifically, I know there's lots of people that mention the recall. Like I saw a few people in here, W. Veery, recall, ML. Tammy A, recall.
Coming when called,
Catherine, yeah. So lots of you guys have a problem with the recall. Let's talk about if your recall, it has fallen apart and your puppy's just not responding, your dog's not responding the way you wanted them to, and they already have a foundation. What are the steps that we're going to take to fix that recall? What are some of the exercises or things that we're going to do?
Yeah, so the very, very first thing that I would do is stop the rehearsal of the dog being able to ignore the command, which means no more freedom for the time being. It's really important that we're not putting our dogs into a situation where it's really easy for them to ignore us. So that might mean, when you're letting your dog out in the backyard to, go potty, maybe you're not going to let them out and stay inside the kitchen and then pop your head out a few minutes later and call the dog in. Because what happens if they keep digging the hole in the ground or they keep chasing the bunny and now you're calling them and they don't listen and there's nothing you can do about it. Maybe I'm going to stop going to the park and letting my dogs take off and run with a bunch of other dogs and forget that I exist, knowing full well that if they're running away with me, out from me, with a bunch of other dogs and I call, I know they're not going to come. Maybe I'm not going to go for a hike in the forest anymore and take my dog off leash and, you know, wonder, are they going to come or are they not going to come? So if you have any hesitation at all whether that dog is going to listen to you, we're not going to put the dog into that scenario anymore until we can go back and revisit some training. So that first part is so important, because you can work your butt off to train your recall, but if you're still allowing your dog to ignore you a couple times a day, you might as well not do the training, because you've just gone and erased it by letting the dogs rehearse ignoring you. So that's going to be really important. The second thing that I would do is control the environment so that my dog can be right. I need to put the idea back in the dog's head that coming back to me is a really positive and fun thing to do. So I might go back and revisit some recall training. Maybe you haven't even done recall training and you've just been lucky to this point where your dog just sort of happens to come when you call them, but you actually haven't done, you know, the proofing. You know, in life skills, actually we start in Puppy Essentials as well. We teach a puppy recall in Puppy Essentials, but in life skills, we work on teaching a reliable recall, and we take 8 weeks to do this. And each week we build slow distance and we go through a proofing phase where the dog has to, you know, leave distractions. They have to pass distractions. You know, a big problem that people have is the dog will come to them, but when they get close, they just run past them or they get distracted and just take off in a different direction. And that person tries to reach out and grab the dog and the dog says, well, I know how long your arms are. And then they won't come in. So we proof that as well. We put distractions behind and around the person. So the dog learns to come in and ignore those things and sit for control and wait for us to hook the leash on. And they get really close so that we don't have to reach out and snatch them. We teach that very, very strictly in the class, but we make it a ton of fun.
It has to be fun.
Yeah. One of our favorite things to do with our dogs is, and you may have heard us refer to this before, it's called a restraint recall. And this is a great thing to go back and revisit with your dog, or if you've not done much recall training, this would be something I suggest you start with. And this is a great way to get the family involved. Ken and I do this with our puppies all of the time. He'll hold the puppy, I'll stand out in front, get my dog's favorite treat or favorite toy, and I'll tease my puppy with that thing until they're kind of pulling to get out of Ken's arms to get to me, and then I'll call their name or I'll use that come command or whatever your recall command is, and I'll run away from the puppy or the dog, and then Ken will release the dog and let the dog chase after me. And when the dog catches me, we play, you know, a 10 or 15 second game of tug, or I'll give them a little jackpot for coming in nice and close. So the dog builds up this excitement, they hear this wonderful word, and then they get to chase and have a lot of fun. And while we do this, the dog's on a long line, I have high value reward, we're practicing in a controlled environment, so it's very, very difficult for the dog to be wrong. And once we practice that, we can do the steps to make it a little harder from there. But that would be a great one to go
back to. One of the reasons that I think a lot of recalls fall apart is they're not fun. It's not that interesting for the dog. You may have a couple of things that I want to hyper-focus on.
People need to let their hair down a little bit.
For sure. You know, I mentioned early on, we use food in our training, but really we're just using that as like a vehicle to get some attention on us. It's all about the motivation. So if food is the motivator, amazing. If it's a toy, that's great. Maybe it's motion. Maybe motion is the thing that turns your puppies or your young dog's recall around.
Yeah.
It's got to be interesting and exciting. And if you're struggling with the recall and you have a dog that's like 8-9 months and you're thinking, maybe this is a teenage phase, I want you to consider, when's the last time you rewarded a random recall?
Mm-hmm.
These are perishable skills. So if I love your example of going in the backyard, because I see this in it as a trainer, it just like makes me, the hair on the back of my neck stand up. But when people use the recall command in this, you know, your case, maybe it's the come command or whatever it is, and they'll use it in a situation that they have no expectation of the dog running to them. Maybe the dog is close, or maybe the dog's in the backyard and they just want them to come up to the house.
Come.
That's right. So, you know, really you need to load value on that word. And until it is like you're 99% sure that your dog is going to turn and bust back to you so that you can reward them, you shouldn't be testing it. I think when you're mentioning, you know, calling in from the backyard, that is not a situation, unless I absolutely needed my dog immediately, I wouldn't use a come command. Mm-hmm. I just wouldn't. That's why, and we have a couple videos here on the YouTube channel, for those of you who have puppies and you haven't started working on the recall yet, we leave the recall until a little bit later in the dog's training so that we can be absolutely sure that they're getting great information every single lesson. And a puppy is just a little too distracted. You know, they're in situations too often that a recall could actually, like, you could be watering down the meaning of that word. But what we will do is use a throwaway, an informal command. We'll use something like here. Maybe it's here, 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 and that's the informal version of the recall. We really have no expectation that the dog's gonna turn and zip back to us, but we start very early on with things like those restrained recalls that will start to build value on that word so that we have some way of calling our dog in and reinforcing like the come to me behavior without ever saying the word that is ultimately going to be the single most important word in our dog's life. Mm-hmm. The other thing we can use is their name. You know, we'll do the same exercise with their name, but we're never watering these things down. So be really critical. If you're starting to see your skills, your dog's skills are like worsening, if they're responding more slowly, think to yourself, geez, well, obviously it's time for training, but what did I do to get myself here?
Yeah.
Am I using the word too much? Have I put my dog in a situation where, like, they're probably not going to be right. They're out there, you know, chasing the cat, and I'm yelling, come, 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 and they're not going to pay attention to you. You just know that your dog's not going to get that until they're trained. Mm-hmm. Because if you really focus on giving them that great information and you take that step back and do that training, then the next time they chase the cat, you call, come, you get that turn. They run right back to you because that's all they know. It's way more valuable. Because of your training, it's way more valuable to come to you and sit in front and get rewarded and pets and praise and whatever than it is to maybe catch the cat. It's really about shifting the value of things, and it's all about motivation.
Yeah. Somebody had asked in the chat, what do you mean by proofing? And that's a good question. And that this is something
we just talked about this. Yeah,
I know. I was telling him about an agility thing that I've been working through with Five Alive. But proofing, and we talk about a lot of this stuff in our online courses because, you know, Ken had mentioned at the top of the show that, you know, we do use a lot of food and a lot of reinforcement a lot, you know, in the early stages because we're trying to build motivation, we're trying to build drive. But our ultimate goal is, and what we believe is a well-trained dog, is a dog can learn to listen no matter what, no matter the distraction, whether I have, you know, a food or reward or toy on me or not, whether I have a leash on me or not. It's a dog that actually truly wants to listen. That's sort of the ultimate goal. And where proofing comes into this is that I need to make sure that if I tell my dog come, they can't just come in certain situations. So it's no good to me if my dog only comes when he's called, when I'm got a bait bag strapped to my waist, or when I have a leash on, or when I have tension on the leash. That's a big one. People think that their dog's recall is so good, but if you look at it, they're pulling the dog towards them. It's not the dog deciding to take initiative to run. Or some dogs only have a great recall when they're in the backyard, but you can't take them for a hike because they'll take off. So proofing means you set up your training in lots of different scenarios and you work through possible problems that could happen to show your dog in this situation, this is what you need to do to be right. In this situation, this is what you need to do to be right. And you'll learn about that, you know, in our programs as we can teach you a little bit about how a dog's brain works, because dogs learn very differently than people do. And so it's important that when we're training them and we're trying to get reliability, especially during the teenage phase when the dogs just want to tell us to take a hike, we need to be able to communicate with them effectively without getting mad, without repeating ourselves 100 times, so that the dog learns to be a good listener. And that's what we want to do at the end of the day, because the better that the dog listens to us, the more comfortable we are giving them freedom, taking them off leash and letting them, you know, bomb around and be a dog and enjoy their life. But we can't do that if we don't have control, because then we can't keep them safe.
I think that's an important question from Glenn, because it's very emblematic, maybe, or common in the YouTube comments kind of thing to see like a black and white answer. So Glenn says, please explain, my 4-month-old puppies are given some time to run around in the backyard and they go wild. Should I not be allowing this? And the hard and fast answer, Glenn, is that depends. Yeah. This is a perfect situation where, you know, I'm going to give you maybe two different answers. But the best answer is like getting a professional dog trainer to look at the situation and give you like
the
definitive answer. With that said, it's not uncommon for us to have our puppies out in whatever the location is with a long line on, knowing that they're safe. And I'm assuming maybe your backyard is a safe place for your puppy to be, and just letting them just burn off some steam, just run around and be totally crazy and wild. But the expectation of them to respond
When it's time to get them back.
Yeah.
What happens?
Right. Precisely. Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. For some dogs, you know, I just wouldn't care. They're clearly like burning off that energy. For other dogs, I might be like, I don't know. You know, I've just gotten absolutely no attention for any reason at all. And my dog's completely disconnected with me. Maybe it's not right for this dog. Maybe this, you know, I shouldn't let my dog just run around and burn around the backyard all the time or for this hour or whatever. That's kind of where like the nuance, I mean, the truth is in the nuances. I'm sure everyone can appreciate, especially when it comes to dog training. So in these situations, it's not that you're not going to have your dog in that setting, maybe, but it's about what you're asking of them, what their level of understanding is. What's your expectation? What are they going to do when you actually get a, you know, you use your come command or you call their name? Because that's ultimately figuring out how to be a great trainer for your dog, knowing that level, pushing the boundaries a little bit, working on that practice, and maybe even to the point of proofing, but knowing where's that tipping point when things are going to completely fall apart.
We're big believers too in so something like being able to run around in the backyard is what I would call a self-rewarding behavior. Yeah. And that would be something that I would be more than happy to allow my puppy to do if I could call them back. So what we basically do is we give the dog more freedom as we feel it's easy for us to regain it. So if I know if I'm going to put my dog in a situation where they're going to really get highly distracted or highly stimulated or whatever it might be, and that's going to take them away from the possibility of being a good listener, then I'm not going to do that in the early stages. And 4 months old is really young. You know, they haven't really had enough repetitions or reliability to be sort of given that freedom. So like Ken said, it's not the end of the world to do, but just be thoughtful and intentional about how you get the puppies back so you don't end up creating a problem where the puppies just say, see you, Dad.
Yeah,
I'll come back when I'm tired. Because that's not really going to be good for your listening skills down the road.
Let's talk a little bit about the second developmental threshold, and that's around the 7 month mark when your puppy gets a little bit bigger. They're a little bit stronger. They've had lots of time to not be in training. The interesting thing about watching dog trainers, dogs as they grew up to like a year and older, is that they're never really out of training. They're always like figuring out new things to train. They're working on some maintenance skills. They understand that you know, dogs need lots of reinforcement, but that and it's work. Like, it's work to train a puppy, to get them to be reliable and to be able to have the freedom to take them all sorts of places and never worry about whether the doors open on your vehicle or not. Mm-hmm. Like, it's these little things. Like, what would it feel like if you could go to the park and never wonder if they're going to come back when you're playing fetch? Doesn't matter what ball games are going on or whether there's like another dog's running in the far corner of the thing. Imagine the confidence that you'd have, but it's going to take a little bit of work to get there. So when your dog gets to that second developmental threshold, they're bigger, they're stronger. You probably haven't been rewarding as much. I mean, you've probably not been so focused on training the skills like your walking on leash, like your recall, like, you know, sit and stay. Man, that's a valuable skill for anybody.
Self-control.
100%. Its impact on your dog's general, behavior and listening skills, it's remarkable. If you're going to pick a skill to work on right now, as soon as the train station's over, work on a sit-stay. But your dog's just had too much time to rehearse the wrong stuff at about the 7 month mark. So that second developmental threshold can be difficult, and it's often where we see people have real problems with stuff like jumping up. Because when their golden puppy was, 11 pounds, not such a big deal. Now that they're 71 pounds, it's a big deal. So mm-hmm. you understand, and as we mentioned on the top at the top of the show, if you know you feel like your patience is waning, you got to go back to the training. What exercises are you going to work on to teach your dog to not jump up? You need to know that maybe I didn't ever really have a reliable skill in the first place. I'm not going to blame it on the teenage phase. I'm going to mm-hmm. understand that I should have worked a little harder on this skill. It can really make a difference in your training. And honestly, a big part of these training stations is trying to communicate to you the mistakes that I made before I was a trainer, because I went to McCann Dogs as a student and my dog was 2 years old. I'd made all the wrong choices and I'm like, there's no way you can train this dog. Like, she's just untrainable. And then I got there and I got excited about the training and I saw the transformation, and the rest, as they say, is history. But to really understand that excuses are so easy. You know, you're struggling with a skill, it's either time to make excuses or make some changes. And I'll tell you that when you make the changes, your dog, it will give you the opportunity to train, you know, through the problem, and you're gonna have the dog that you really wanted. Mm-hmm. But you have to understand that it is a stage. And it is a training opportunity. Just flip your mindset. That's what I love about these train stations, is I can talk mm-hmm. directly to you and tell you that you're going to get through it. It's going to be a bit of work.
I'd like to offer a different suggestion.
Yeah, fire away.
Sometimes when you have a dog that's going through the adolescent phase, so this is the, you know, over 7 months age gap, 7 months and above, and it can happen at any time. I think somebody said, my dog's 18 months, could he be adolescent? Sometimes dogs just go through regression. That's not an uncommon thing.
Yep.
But what I might think about suggesting is, when you go back in your training, sometimes switching up your, like, the training equipment that you use with your dog can often make a huge
That's
difference.
A good point.
Something is like making sure that they're wearing a well-fit collar, or you're using like a proper leash, or in some cases, we will recommend people to try using a head halter or a head collar.
Yeah.
The one that we suggest is a product called the Gentle Leader. And in our opinion, in our 40 years of training, especially in the last 30 years, I would say, we've had great success with the Gentle Leader product with dogs who are a little bit wild and crazy, that are doing a lot of pulling, and that you just need to calm the mind a little bit so that you can jam pack it full of information.
Yeah.
And it's really, really, really good for dogs who are in an adolescent phase, because it is a really nice, natural leadership quality when you use it without hurting the dog. So it does not deal with the premise of pain.
Yeah.
It deals with the premise of pressure, and the pressure points are all sort of conducive to the same type of reaction or feeling that your puppy would have gotten disciplined maybe as a puppy with their mother. So when there's tension on the head collar, the dog automatically sort of relaxes, and it's just a great way to kind of calm the dog down, because what we don't want to do is be getting angry or having to use the big corrections to get our dogs to respond. We want to be able to be calm and clear with our information with them. So sometimes using different equipment or better equipment during our training. It doesn't have to be a Gentle Leader. That's just a suggestion.
If you're going to choose a head collar, you should be choosing the Gentle
Leader. I was saying that over making sure you have a well-fit collar.
Lots
of times dogs will come in and they'll have trouble, and I'll look at their collar and they're still wearing what I would put on a 4-month-old puppy.
Right.
It's skinny and it's got a crappy a clip on it, and it's just not effective for the dog. If you get a little bit wider collar with a buckle that you can fit nicely around the dog's neck, it should fit snug enough that you can just fit two fingers. It shouldn't be so loose that it can spin around them and they can be like a helicopter at the end of their leash. There needs to be good fitting equipment, because that is a presence to the dog. You know, if I have a well-fit collar and I'm holding my leash with good strength and I'm moving my body well and I'm got good timing and I'm got good mechanics in the way that I'm addressing the dog, that shows leadership. And sometimes we have some dogs that are being a total pill with their person, and I'll take the leash and place the dog into a sit, and all of a sudden the dog's like, oh, okay, you know what you're doing. And right. I literally didn't do anything other than the way that I moved my hands or the way that I'm standing with my body, because the dog can sense those types of things. So I do think having good equipment is really important. We do sell the equipment that we use with our own dogs and what we recommend, we sell in our store. So you can go and check that out. We also, I actually would mention for the Gentle Leader product, you can get it different places, of course. But if you get it from us, we actually have the company make Gentle Leaders special custom, for us, custom for us, because they come with a buckle instead of a snap. They're going to last way longer. They're not going to accidentally come apart, you know, when you're in the park or in a busy situation. They're going to last a long time. This is so great.
This is going to feel like a Gentle Leader pitch.
It's not even on the page. I just was thinking about
we're not sponsored by them, but I'll tell you, like, I've seen it change so many dogs' behavior. Yeah. We'll use it not only for like pulling on leash, but also for like confidence building with some dogs. Putting that head collar on them just gives them that like extra sense of like, okay, you're driving the ship or steering the ship as we make our way through this, you know, maybe overwhelming or like threatening environment. I know you've got things under control, but I actually tacked or pinned a Gentle Leader so that you can check it out in the chat. You might have to refresh your page.
They're really helpful.
Yeah, super helpful. But it specifically that brand, don't go with the other ones. There's just there's too much motion and they don't get the right pressure point to like actually control your dog's head. It is a valuable tool. And the nice part, someone had mentioned, Jenny, I think, mentioned, well, if I start using a Gentle Leader, am I going to have to use it forever?
That's, I love that question.
That's the best part about the Gentle Leader. The reason the Gentle Leader is such a valuable tool is
because you can wean off of it. So the way that the nose loop fits, I wish I had a Gentle, because I didn't know I was going to talk about it, I would have had an example here for
Sam,
you.
Sam, can you grab it?
But you can slide the nose loop off and attach the leash to the so that you can attach the leash to the buckle underneath the chin. And that way, when you're out for a walk and you think to yourself, gosh, my dog is doing so well. And then you can slip the nose loop off and see how it goes. Yeah. And if it doesn't go well, you can slip it back on. So you can kind of use it and not use it. I know when I've trained many of my own dogs on a Gentle Leader. And sometimes I'll start with some of the easier exercises or the in the less distracting environments when I start to wean off of it until eventually I don't need it anymore. But to be honest with you, and I'm a pretty good dog trainer, guys. I've been training dogs for a long time. I still use a Gentle Leader. So I do very, very high level agility competitions all over the world with my dogs. And my little dog Beeline, who is a little rocket in agility, I walk her to the course on a Gentle Leader because it completely calms her mind. It puts her in the perfect headspace. So when we step out together, she is just like super calm and she listens so well. And I couldn't have it any other way. We are so peaceful as we walk there together, which is exactly the mindset that you have to be when you're in a big competition.
21-time world champion dog trainer. 21-time world champion of dog agility.
Yeah, so that's
21-time world champion. If I was the world champion of something, I would have the shirt and the foam finger and like a giant cowboy hat that said like, I'm number one.
Yeah.
She gets embarrassed when I talk about it. I saw Justin mention in this, he said, I just bought a flat buckle collar for my dog.
Yeah,
and
okay.
That's the starting point. You know, that is exactly what we're working towards, is something like a flat buckle collar. Something really simple to put on your dog.
That's good. Lots of times, if you have a well-fit flat buckle collar, that's great. You just want it, whatever you use, you want to make sure that it's good quality and that it fits well. And of course, again, if you're a student of ours and we get to know your dog, I can tell you within 30 seconds what I think your dog's equipment needs to be just based on their energy or you know, your vibe with them. We can give you that guidance very, very quickly.
For sure. I think I want to summarize that second developmental threshold. Understanding at that, whatever age, understanding at that second hurdle. You know, I love I see a dog trainer share it a lot. There's that like image where it's like how people imagine dog training will go and then like how dog training really goes. And I mean, we experience that those same challenges. There are peaks and there are valleys and there are steep hills to climb, but we know that we're going to see it through. You know, we know where we're going. We know what our North Star is. So identifying whether you're at the the 4-month mark or that 7-month mark, or maybe it's 18 months for you. I don't really care. As long as you know that I'm going to take a step back in my training and understand that the dog's not doing it because of the teenage phase. They're doing it because maybe it's self-rewarding. Maybe because I didn't reinforce what I wanted enough. Maybe I gave them too many opportunities to be wrong. And that's, you know, Now you're going to turn things around and you're going to be a better manager for your dog using a house line, a leash, or a long line. Maybe you need to use a crate or baby gate so they don't have access to whatever the area is where they're making the mistake. Maybe you're not going to ask them for that recall. Maybe you're not going to shout out, come, when you're not really sure what's going to happen. You're not going to put them out in the backyard for a pee and then be yelling out the back door for them to come back in when they've never really responded to that in the first place. Yeah. You're going to get out there and train it. And I'll tell you, this is, I'm talking to past Ken, and I'm talking to my past self because I bought all of the stuff, all of the things that I thought would, like leashes and collars and harnesses and things, all this stuff. And what I really needed to do was just take a step back and start training my dog. And boy, oh boy, what a life she gave me. You know, what an incredible experience I had with that dog. Even at in the early stages when we got some foundation of skills. But, you know, just I don't want you to chalk it up to something like the teenage phase. Question I have for you, though, is do you play music for your dogs? Do you guys, do you, like we with Beeline, actually, we were traveling recently. We were at a dog agility competition. And it was in the Airbnb we stayed at. It was a little noisy, like there were trucks going down the street.
Quite noisy, yeah.
Huge hello to Ida Washington. Thanks for joining us. Welcome to the Heart Dog team. But so we what we did was put
she
on.
She was a bit stressed by like all the trucks
stressed.
Going
yeah,
by
really
and
noisy.
That type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So we put on some music and it made a difference. You know, it just sort of filled the room with that, you know, environmental sound.
We use it every Thursday on garbage day.
That's right. Exactly. So what we did was identify the problem. We decided to work together with some digital music creators and create music that's specifically made for dogs with some very specific characteristics and features that will fill the room with that sound. So for example, we have a couple of playlists I forget what we call them, song categories in like Spotify and Apple Music that are specific for thunderstorms that feature like bigger, lower tones that really fill that room out and hope to like mask or make the thunder rumbling a little less abrupt. We have dog music for your dog to sleep, just to relax them, that we play on YouTube. We have a YouTube channel streaming two streams constantly. You can pick whichever one you think your dog responds to better. Mm-hmm. Or you can listen to it on Spotify or Apple Music. At the end of tonight's show, when I turn the lights off here in the train station and we go. Actually, did you see that the new fitness place down between Taco Time and just before Fudge, there's a hot tub in the fitness place down there across from the Candy Connection?
I'm too distracted by you saying Fudge.
We're going hot tubbing right after this. When I turn off the lights, what's going to happen is you guys are going to be directed to the McCann Dogs music channel, and you can put it on, just kick back, put your feet up, relax, maybe have a glass of wine, go over in your head, what's my training plan for tomorrow? Because you could absolutely turn around the teenage phase for your dog. Don't forget that our online team dropped a 30, are you swimming? What's going on?
Yeah, it's just air swimming over here. Oh. Don't mind me.
$30 coupon. Coupon code is TRAINSTATION0713. It's valid for 24 hours. That's it. If you're watching this on the replay and you're 24 hours late,
come and join us.
It's 8:32 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you sign up after that, no more coupon, and I apologize for that. But I want to thank you for joining us here today. Sue Kay, one of our Heart Dog team. Ida Washington, new to the Heart Dog team. I've seen a few. I remember Jeff D had joined us. I can find these guys. Oh, my goodness. Find them. Jeff D, Britt R, and Barry Moyle. Thank you for becoming members of the Heart Dog team. And thank you to you. We're excited to have you with us. We hope you enjoyed the show tonight to get you motivated, to give you some skills, to set you up
to be
successful. I'm saving that for the hot tub, Kale.
Oh, great.
With all of the teaching, all of the training, all of the things we've talked about tonight, the rest, my friends, well, that is up to you. Oh.